From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. With campaigning already underway for this fall's midterm elections, we take a look back at the tumultuous 2000 presidential election between President George W. Bush and Al Gore. Florida's 27 electoral votes lay at the center of that contest amid narrow vote margins, conflicting statutes, political disputes, and uncounted ballots due to that hanging Chad issue. Former Florida Supreme Court Justice Charlie Wells shares insights from his experience during that debate in his book titled Inside Bush v. Gore. WGCU's Ashley Lopez recently caught up with Chief Justice Wells. We'll hear that conversation. Plus, Florida's annual legislative session kicks off in March. We continue our series of conversations with members of the Southwest Florida Legislative Delegation for a look at lawmakers' priorities this year. We'll hear from Republican State Representatives Matt Hudson and Ray Rodriguez. First, this news.
This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Ashley Lopez. Thanks for joining us. Ahead on the show, John Davis spoke with Republican State Representatives Ray Rodriguez and Matt Hudson about this upcoming state legislative session, which begins this March. But first, a conversation with former Florida Supreme Court Justice Charlie Wells. Wells was the Chief Justice presiding over the court during the contentious 2000 presidential election and the closely watched Bush v. Gore decision. Due to the state's hefty electoral votes, Florida was at the center of that year's election. The outcome of its election would choose the next president of the United States. However, the state's election was riddled with problems: razor-thin vote margins, conflicting state statutes, heated political disputes between the state's attorney general and the secretary of state, and the now infamous hanging chads issue that led to many uncounted ballots. The Florida Supreme Court, in a 4-3 decision, compelled a statewide recount, which was eventually halted by the U.S. Supreme Court. Chief Justice Wells was part of the dissenting minority in that decision. He recently wrote a book about his experience during that case. The book is called Inside Bush v. Gore, published by the University Press of Florida. I caught up with Justice Charlie Wells. He spoke about his thoughts during that tumultuous 36-day period back in November 2000. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live, Justice Wells.
Thank you very much.
So I read your book, and now that it's been more than a decade since, you know, that tumultuous 36-day period back in the year 2000, do you still feel the gravitas and the importance of the Bush v. Gore decision in that whole time, you know, especially your role in that you were, you know, such a key figure in a big part of American history?
I think it was a very significant period of time, and I hope that there were lessons that come out of that experience that will help in future very close elections, both in Florida and across the United States.
What do you think some of those lessons should be?
Well, I think one thing that we have learned is that it's very important to review election procedures on a regular, ongoing basis. One of the problems that we had in the 2000 election in Florida was the use of a ballot form, the punch card ballot, which had been demonstrated in elections in other states prior to the year 2000, that it presented a lot of problems, and yet the ballot was still used and was a large part of the problem that we had in Florida. That remembers that election will remember the hanging chads and the pregnant chads and the fact that the problem was that voters had a hard time punching out the ballot so that it would be in a form that could be read by the machine counts.
Is this case, you know, something that you still think about every once in a while, or do you have some distance from that time, you know, at this point?
Well, I have some distance, but I'm repeatedly reminded of it because hardly an election period goes by that there isn't some comment by candidates and by commentators on the networks about the Florida 2000 election.
Yeah, And going back to that case and that time, one of the points you made several times in your book is that, you know, timing was a very important issue to you at that time. You wrote that one of your main concerns was the effect of prolonging the certification of that election in Florida and how that would have a serious effect on, you know, our democracy as a country. Could you talk to me about that? Run me through what your thinking was at the time.
Well, my thinking as the case developed over those 36 days, and when we got more into the election law, both at the federal level and at the state level, it became apparent that the design of elections that protect the American democracy is that we have a transfer of power based upon the election within a very short period of time following the election, so that there can be a transition of leadership. And one of the problems that we had in that election in 2000 was that if it had been prolonged past the 36-day period, which was provided by the federal election law, then we were going to be in a position in which President Clinton at the time was term limited, it would have had to go into the Congress and then probably later to the U.S. Supreme Court for a resolution of who was going to be president. Well, the world just is too instant a place in this present era to have the American presidency in doubt for a 3 or 4 or 6 month period, which would have come about if we hadn't had procedures in place that required us to get a decision made within those 36 days.
And did you feel that was a really important role, or I guess sort of your key role as the Chief Justice there, you know, taking into account the big picture concerns of not having a president-elect in a timely manner in this country? Or do you know, did you also balance that, you know, which is what we would imagine is about settling a legal dispute, which is what, a justice does, and deciding which party, you know, in this case, either the Bush or the Gore campaign, you know, which one had a stronger argument?
Well, they were both important, and we had a perfect storm of issues that were legal that came to a head during the post-election period in 2000 in Florida. We had statutes which were the election statutes, the state election statutes, were in conflict and had to be resolved. We had conflicting opinions coming out of the Attorney General of the state and the Division of Elections of the state, conflicting legal opinions. We had no standards by which to do manual counts and no direction in the statutes as to whether there should or shouldn't be manual recounts. Votes. And so we had a lot of loose ends that had to be tied up during that period. So there were numerous legal issues, but in the final analysis, and it was my judgment that we had to be aware that this was, after all, the selection of the leader of the most powerful nation in the world, and it had to get completed in a timely way.
We have been speaking to former Florida Supreme Court Chief Justice Charlie Wells, who presided over the court during the contentious Bush v. Gore case amidst the 2000 presidential election. And you touched upon some of my next questions, and that is, you know, I want to talk to you about some of those underlying issues that came to a head at that time. And many of these were problems well before those petitions and lawsuits were brought to your desk in November 2000. First, you discussed that there were some, you know, discrepancies in Florida statutes. They were sort of conflicting. That made the legality of the timing of those vote recounts unclear. Can you talk to me about that, some of the things in Florida law that were just, you know, something that you had to settle at the time?
there were very express conflicts within the statute. We had a statute which was passed in 1950, which required that the county supervisors, who were the provided the leadership in each county in the counting of election results, to report the results in their county no later than 7 days following the election. And the statute provided that if the report by the county supervisor was not in the state election division office by 5 p.m. on the 7th day following the election, then the votes for those for that county shall be ignored, using the word shall. Whereas in 1988, the legislature passed another statute which said that the county returns had to be in the state office division of elections in Tallahassee in by 5 p.m. on the 7th day. And if they weren't, they may be ignored. Well, may. So there was two statutes, one right next to each other. One provided that they shall be, which is a letter, a word that connotes a mandatory conduct. And there was a second statute which said that they may be ignored, which denotes that it gives the administrator some discretion. So there had to be those questions had to be resolved as to whether the Secretary of State, Catherine Harris, had discretion by which to accept votes after the 7th day. She took the position that she did not. The Attorney General's legal position was that she should. So that was first resolved at the trial court level in Leon County, which in a case that had been brought by the Volusia County supervisor, and then that case worked its way through the First District Court of Appeals to our court in a very brief period of time, and that's the issue that was presented to us, among several other issues having to do with one other statute. In the first time we had oral argument in the case, which was on the 20th of November, which the election was held on the 7th. We heard oral argument in the Florida Supreme Court on November the 20th and issued an opinion on the 21st. The other statute which I referenced, it was a statute which said that if a candidate or a candidate's supporters thought that there was a basis to protest the election, that could be done up until those votes were reported on the 7th day by the county supervisor. Well, the statute didn't leave any time for there to be any manual recounting from the time that a protest was filed to the county canvassing board and when the votes had to be reported to Tallahassee. So that was another conflict in the statute which had to be resolved.
And you touched upon this a little bit, but you also wrote about the political issues in Florida that complicated this issue further. At the time, then Florida Secretary of State Catherine Harris had been helping out the Bush campaign, and Florida's Attorney General Bob Butterworth had been connected to the Gore campaign. Did these political realities change anything about how the court would typically handle a case involving state elections?
Well, they did, and as I said in the book that I've written, Inside Bush v. Gore, I'm not really critical of the fact that the Attorney General had been involved in the presidential campaign of Vice President Gore and that the Secretary of State had been involved in the presidential campaign of Governor Bush at the time. because that had become a tradition in Florida for those cabinet officers to be able to be involved in political campaigns of presidential candidates. However, in this instance, it demonstrated that that's not a very sound thing for the state, in that when those officials were identified with particular candidates, that cast a doubt on the objectivity of their legal opinions. And it, in this instance, it worked out that Catherine Harris's Office of Legal Counsel came out with an opinion directed to the county supervisors and county canvassing boards that favored the candidate that she had worked for, Governor Bush, and the Attorney General's opinion came out favoring Vice President Gore, the candidate for whom he had worked. So we would, at our court, at the Florida Supreme Court, would normally have given those opinions some degree of presumption of correctness, but we couldn't do that with because there was just a lack of credibility in the public of the objectivity of officials whose opinions were also identified with their political candidates.
And this case was unique for many reasons. You wrote that settling the recount issue, at least the legal issue between Harris and Butterworth, a sort of a difference of opinion in Florida statutes about that, was not necessarily something the court would intervene in. But you and other justices felt the court would eventually have to step in. At what point did it become clear to you that the Florida Supreme Court was going to have a say in this election and sort of settle what was going on?
Well, I would say that by the election, as I say, was on November the 7th, and I believe that by November 14th it became clear, because that was when the case having to do with whether there could or couldn't be manual recounting and whether the 7-day period had to be enforced literally was taken up by the trial court in Tallahassee. That was Judge Terry Lewis. And it was apparent that whoever lost before Judge Lewis was going to move the court further, appeal further, and get to us very quickly. And so we began to prepare to have oral argument and then try to decide the case, and because of the calendar, we tried to decide the case, and in fact did decide that case prior to Thanksgiving, which was the following week, on the November the 23rd that year.
And following the first decision to allow recounts in certain counties, you said there was a lot of backlash that the court got that you said was a little harsher or unfair. Was that a hard time? You mentioned that then Pensacola Republican Congressman Joe Scarborough, in particular, who now hosts a TV show on NBC, MSNBC, I believe, said that your court declared a war on the rule of law in Florida. Was criticism like that particularly hard to hear?
Well, it was something that went with the territory, and we had been criticized throughout this process in the media, and I had noted that because of the fact that we had all been appointed by Democratic governors. Every member of our court had been appointed by either Governor Graham or Governor Childs, and there was a feeling that we were going to lean toward Vice President Gore for that reason. And in the end, it turned out that was not, didn't necessarily hold true, and that our final decision was a 4-3 split. But in any regard, the harshness of the criticism, I thought, was unfair to the extent that I I didn't feel like that they were basing it upon what the issues were that were actually presented to our court, but that rather they were just coming, jumping to a conclusion as to why we decided in a certain way because we had been appointed by Democratic governors. And so I, to that extent, and I thought that some of it was pretty harsh in tone, but that's all in the way that these things tend to work.
We have been speaking to former Florida Supreme Court Chief Justice Charlie Wells, who presided over the court during the contentious Bush v. Gore case amidst the 2000 presidential election. And now I want to talk to you about that final decision your court made, this decision to compel a statewide recount. You wrote that you were, quote, depressed, shaken, and fearful about the majority's opinion. You know, again, you were the dissenting opinion in that case. So why did you feel that way?
Well, by the time that we got to the second opinion, this was now December the 7th, and it had been agreed to by both the lawyers for Vice President Gore and the lawyer for Governor Bush that this needed to be completed by December the 12th in order for Florida's electoral votes not to be in jeopardy of being further contested in Congress and then later on and when the Electoral College met on December 18th. And the U.S. Supreme Court had issued an opinion in remanding the first decision that we made back to our court and had referenced the fact that there was a safe harbor provision if all of this had been all of the controversies were finally resolved in Florida by the Florida courts by December the 12th, then that would be conclusive as to how the Florida vote would come out. We heard a different circuit court in Leon County in Tallahassee had issued an opinion on December the 4th in which it made a decision that there shouldn't be any further manual counting and that what was the vote as of that date was going to be the final vote. That was appealed to us, and we heard that case on December the 7th. And it was quite apparent to me that by this time, the margin of error in this counting of votes was always going to be greater than the margin of victory, that we didn't have in place legislative standards for doing manual counting or the procedures to do them that was going to give it any more reliable results. And if we didn't get this done by December the 12th, this was going to lead to a situation that I have described of being very uncertain as to who was going to be president after the inauguration day in January of 2001. And so I felt it was time to get it over with, and that was something that was vitally important for the country and for the world to go ahead and get this matter finalized. But four out of the seven votes on our court did not agree with that and felt like that there should be a further counting, and in fact, there should be a statewide recount of all of Florida's votes. Well, that was going to lead to a confrontation with the Florida legislature, who was then going to have its own delegation to the Electoral College. And I just thought that that was headed for a constitutional crisis. And so I wrote, when the majority on our court decided to go in the direction of further counting, that really did cause alarm for me. And so I wrote what has been described as a pretty emotional dissent. And I felt like that it was necessary, and in fact, the day after that opinion came out, the United States Supreme Court stepped in and stayed the further counting, and that effectively, they then entered their second opinion on December the 12th, and that ended this controversy.
Yeah, and that was my next question, you know, that the U.S. Supreme Court, you know, eventually halted that state recount. You wrote that, quote, "I accept that the decision of the majority of the Supreme Court was vital because of what it did and not because of the reasons or analysis that the majority of that court gave for its decision," end quote. What parts of their reasons or analysis did you not exactly agree with?
Well, their opinion was largely based upon the analysis of whether there was equal protection in the counting procedures. And it's not that I didn't agree with them on that, but the commentators who have been very critical of the United States Supreme Court for that decision on that basis, I felt like ignored the fact that what primarily a court in that situation has to do is make a decision. And the U.S. Supreme Court, within its decision, in writing about it, stated that this was not an opinion which should have I'm having a hard time with that word, but it shouldn't set a precedent for other equal protection arguments because of the unique facts of this presidential election and the need for there to be a decision. And that's really what I was intending in the section of my book that I wrote that, because I do think that that the most important thing of what the U.S. Supreme Court did at that time was recognize that we had process that had tried to get to a reliable decision as to the vote, and that process had been exhausted, and that it was, and that a decision as to who was going to be president really needed to be the outcome at that particular time, and that was the historic nature of what was done.
We have been speaking to former Florida Supreme Court Chief Justice Charlie Wells, who presided over the court during the contentious Bush v. Gore case amidst the 2000 presidential election. Following that, I mean, looking back, you know, there were, I think, a group of news organizations sort of pulled resources together and recounted a lot of those votes in Florida. And it seems like there is still a question looming, you know, did Gore really lose that state? And, you know, it isn't very clear. I mean, it's, you know, I think Bush won 4 of those recounts, Gore won 5. You know, considering all that, do you still think that moving quickly towards the end of that particular election, as opposed to, you know, carefully counting all of the ballots cast, was the best course?
Well, I continue to believe that without there being any standards or procedures for doing those manual counts that were in place at the time the election occurred, that the type of after the fact counting that was done by the newspapers really substantiates the fact that the election was essentially a tie, and at some point you had to make a call, because in fact I think the Orlando Sentinel really did a post-election analysis together with the Miami Herald, and I think that the conclusion there was that Governor Bush was in most of those the ways that you would count those still going to come out the victor, but that was something that it largely depended on who was doing the counting and what they were using to determine what the intent of voters were on those punch card ballots, where the punch didn't get all of the paper out of where the vote was supposed to be, and so there was some residual doubt as to who the voter had actually voted for. And so I think that's a long answer to the fact that I think that what those post-analysis counts really showed is that the process had given us as reliable a result as we were going to get by December the 12th.
And, you know, one of the large points that you made in your summation was the role that bad electoral practices played in this controversy. Following the national embarrassment that was, you know, the hanging chads issue in 2000, you know, and then the ill-managed 2012 presidential election that led to long lines in Florida. Do you think there is something about this state that makes it hard to run elections smoothly here?
No, I don't think that it's in the water, so to speak. I think these are really differentiated problems that happened in 2012 from those which occurred in 2000. I think that what happened in 2000, that there have been some revisions in the Florida election law, which hopefully would, if you came to a time when those revisions in the statutes were stress tested, that they would serve us better than the conflicting statutes that we had in 2000. For instance, there's a longer period of time to report the ballots to the state. There's no longer being used the punch card ballots. And so I think that some of those problems have been eliminated. But you know, I don't think that it's something that is unique to Florida. It's unique to any election in which the vote is so very, very close that essentially it's a tie. And those kinds of close elections are always going to present a challenge to come up with a winner that is going to satisfy all of the objective standards that we would like to have satisfied in our elections.
And my last question, you know, I'm sure you get asked about this case in this period in time a lot. What is one thing that sticks in your mind that you tell people when you know, asked to describe what it was like to be in your position during that time?
Well, it was certainly a fascinating experience from every standpoint. I've had a lifelong interest in elections and in elective politics, and certainly being at the center of a firestorm such as the 2000 election was fascinating and exciting. But I also come away with it with one abiding positive thought, and that is that we in this country have something that we come out of that election that is to be proud of, and that is that there was regardless of all the emotion and regardless of how people felt so strongly about one candidate or the other, that there was never any question that once the final court, which was always going to be the United States Supreme Court, had issued its final decision in that controversy, that power was going to pass in the presidency, that there was not going to be a resolution of this in the streets, but rather it was going to be a resolution in the courts. Now, that's something that holds this country in a very different light than what we see going on around the world. And it's very important and positive for this country to have the enough and abiding faith in the rule of law that it's going to abide by the final decision. It puts a tremendous responsibility on the courts and on the lawyers to earn that type of respect. But I hope that in the future, with these types of controversies, that we can continue to have the faith in the system of resolving disputes that we ended with in 2000 by allowing the peaceful transfer of power of the presidency of the United States.
We have been speaking to Florida Supreme Court Chief Justice Charlie Wells. Thank you so much for joining us, Justice.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you very much.
That's all the time we have for this portion of the show. We're taking a short break, but when we return, a conversation with Republican State Representatives Ray Rodriguez and Matt Hudson about this upcoming state legislative session. That's just ahead. Stay with us. You're listening to WGCU, NPR for Southwest Florida.